Hey everyone, I wanted to give you a heads up that the highly anticipated second season of the hit podcast Proof is finally here. So if you're looking for more true crime content, go check it out because Proof is an awesome investigative true crime podcast co-hosted by Susan Simpson of Undisclosed and Jacinda Davis of Evil Lives Here. Proof made headlines for its first season in 2022 after proving the innocence of two Georgia men serving life sentences for murdering their friend, Brian Bowling, when they were just 17 years old. And 25 years later, on December 8th of 2022, both men were finally freed, all based on evidence unearthed by Proof. Now in the second season of Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, Susan and Jacinda are on the case again, this time traveling to the streets of Manteca, California to uncover who really murdered 18-year-old Renee Ramos. On June 5th of 2000, Ramos's body was found buried under a pile of debris inside the shell of a new Home Depot building. Despite tips hinting at alternate suspects, tips that were ignored until now, Renee's boyfriend, 18-year-old skateboarder Jake Silva, and Ty Lopez, the 33-year-old uncle of one of Jake's close friends, were arrested and convicted of her murder. Fans of true crime and investigative series won't want to miss this riveting new season and follow the case as Susan and Jacinda uncover long overlooked evidence about what really happened to Renee by listening to Proof, Murder at the Warehouse, wherever you get your podcast. Hey guys, I'd like to introduce you to a new podcast that I know you're going to love. Do you like travel? Do you like picturesque locations and getting away from it all? Well, this new podcast has all that and murder. It's called Slaycation and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that took place on vacation. Hosted by a true crime fanatic, her comedy writer husband and his TV producing partner, Slaycation brings a unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, and WTF stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, two recently engaged lovebirds whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended underwater. Each episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that'll intrigue you. It's the discussion between a longtime married couple and business partners who happen to be Emmy-nominated TV producers. Each episode of Slaycation also includes humor, takeaway and travel tips that will keep your next vacation from being your last. If you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Memories are a fickle thing, some stronger than others. They are the core to who we are as individuals and the relationships we hold near and dear. Without them, we'd just be left to wander the world as many of the people on today's list did. Here are five mysterious disappearances caused by amnesia. Number 5. Lost Memories of Edgar LaTulip. On an ordinary day back in September of 1986, Edgar LaTulip, 21-year-old resident of Kitchener, Ontario, set out on a journey that would ultimately become one of the most astonishing mysteries in all of Canadian history. This day would mark the beginning of a 3-decade-long enigma, intertwining hope, despair, and the sheer unpredictability of our memories. Edgar, grappling with psychological challenges and developmental delays, was no stranger to life's hardships. His mother, Sylvia Wilson, watched over her son with a heart heavy with concern, especially after witnessing his fragile state after an attempt to leave this earth. Edgar's decision then to buy a bus ticket to Niagara Falls on September 2nd triggered red flags given the fall's history. And after that, Edgar seemingly vanished into thin air, and his family feared the worst had happened. His mother stated, When Edgar disappeared, I became quite sick. I had to take a leave of absence from work. I was near a nervous breakdown. As the years trickled by, the chances of finding any sign of Edgar dwindled. And the Waterloo Regional Police Service, unwavering in their commitment, pursued every lead and every possible sighting, however fleeting. The case even garnered attention through innovative methods, such as flashing photos of missing persons in airports and public spaces, a strategy employed by the victims of violence in 1991. But still, Edgar remained a ghost, his fate an unresolved question mark that hung heavily in the hearts of his family and investigators alike. The breakthrough in this strange case came very unexpectedly, because it was 30 years after Edgar's disappearance. In 2016, a startling revelation emerged from St. Catharines, which is about an hour and a half away from his hometown. A man who believed he might be Edgar LaTulip stepped forward. This man, who had lived a life unbeknownst to himself, had reached out to his social worker, his fragmented memories nudging him towards his true identity. The puzzle pieces then began to fall into place. A DNA test then confirmed the unbelievable truth. The man in St. Catharines was indeed Edgar. His journey from that fateful day in 1986 to his rediscovery in 2016 was nothing short of a miracle. A head injury sustained shortly after he arrived in the Niagara region had robbed him completely of his past, compelling him to forge a new identity just to survive. His life in St. Catharines was humble, marked by periods of homelessness and a dependency on social services. Yet, through this haze of forgotten memories, Edgar had managed to build a life for himself, unaware of the void and family he had left in his hometown. The reunion between Edgar and his mother was a poignant climax to this extraordinary tale. Sylvia, who endured years of agony and uncertainty, finally saw her son again. Edgar, once a troubled young man, now stood before her as a settled 50-year-old, his life's journey a testament to the resilience of the human spirit. And their reunion was a bittersweet mix of joy, relief, and the sadness of the years lost. Number 4, The Mystery of Craig Williamson. In the brisk fall of 1990, the shimmering waters of Lake Tahoe bore witness to the union of Craig Williamson and Christine Reinhard. Their romance, swift and intense, blossomed in just a few months' time, solidifying their shared dream of a prosperous future in fish farming. Christine's home state of Wisconsin then became the backdrop for their aspirations, where they delved into the cultivation of tilapia. Craig's venture, then, to Colorado Springs on August 28th of 1993 was meant to be a routine business trip. Upon arriving in Colorado, he rented a car so he could get to his appointments. His last conversation with Christine happened around 9 p.m. on August 30th from his hotel. And after that, she wouldn't hear from him again. When Craig failed to return home the following day, a chilling silence took over. Alarmingly, his credit card surfaced in El Paso, Texas, hundreds of miles from his supposed location. The puzzle deepened when 2 weeks later his rental car appeared in Juarez, Mexico, abandoned yet devoid of any clues of wrongdoing. Detective Robert Johnson, spearheading the Colorado investigation, found himself trying to piece together what happened, but he was hitting dead ends. Determined to unearth the truth, Christine then embarked on her own personal quest for answers. Her journey led her to Colorado Springs, the very hotel Craig last stayed in. Discoveries unfolded, Craig's belongings left behind unclaimed, no signs of a struggle. Her concerns then centered around a recent concussion that Craig had suffered before he headed out of town. And could this disappearance somehow be tied to that? She wondered if maybe he was attacked and had his rental car stolen. If he suffered more head trauma, then maybe that was the final blow that sent his memory swirling, and he could just be out there wandering, trying to find a way back to a place he couldn't even remember. The story of Craig's disappearance hit the airwaves of Colorado and Wisconsin, reaching a retired nurse named Judy Inman. And her account then added a new layer to the unfolding narrative because, aboard a train from Montana to Washington, she said she encountered a disheveled man. His conversation peppered with references to fish and a distant origin. And Judy, with her nursing background, suspected a head injury, and of course, the description resonated with Christine. Craig's words about fish from afar mirrored their shared enterprise. So fueled by hope, Christine traced the train's route, spending 6 weeks going to every location that it stopped at, looking for clues or any sign that her lost husband had been there. Her dedication led her to Judy and a pivotal clue. The man resembling Craig disembarked at Wishram, Washington. This revelation sparked a theory, and Craig, disoriented, might have confused Wishram with Washougal, a town that he had lived in back in the 80s. Still, despite extensive searches, Craig remained missing, but Christine's conviction and his survival never wavered. The investigation painted a complex portrait of possibilities. There was Christine's theories of an attack, investigators' suspicions of murder, and the possibility of a staged disappearance. The disheveled look, if that was Craig, was evidence suggesting he might have altered his appearance, fueling speculation about his true motives. The unexpected turn in this case came just about 2 years after he had gone missing, in July of 1995. And Craig was watching a re-airing of an Unsolved Mysteries broadcast where he recognized himself. He then recounted a tale of a mugging, amnesia, and a nomadic existence culminating in Key West, Florida. His past, including Christine and his family, remained shrouded in the fog of forgotten memories. Their reunion, though bittersweet, marked the end of one journey and the beginning of another. Craig's memory remained elusive, their marriage dissolving into a friendship. Christine sought solace in Wyoming and Craig in California, each charting a path towards healing and renewal. Yet, the mystery of Craig Williamson lingers, and investigators still remain skeptical, pondering the depths of his memory loss. Was it a cunning escape from burdens or a genuine case of severe amnesia? Number 3. The Forgotten Self. In the sprawling metropolis of San Diego, a strange mystery began to unfold in the early 1990s. Man found himself wandering the sun-drenched streets with a few dollars in his pocket and a huge void where his memory should have been. He knew nothing of who he was or how he got there, and his past was a total blank slate. This mystery man would later be known as Kwame Seku, a name he adopted after stumbling upon it in a magazine. Little did he know his true identity was tied to a man named Winston Bright, a father of three from New York who had mysteriously vanished into thin air on October 12th of 1990. That morning, Winston, who worked as a telephone utility worker, kissed his wife and children goodbye before heading to work and never returned to his East Village home. As the years rolled on back in California, Seku carved out a new existence for himself, his past life as Winston Bright seemingly erased by a sudden bout of amnesia. He built a life from scratch, eventually becoming a teacher, a profession he pursued until his retirement. But beneath the surface of this newly constructed life, fragments of his previous existence began to resurface. In a twist of fate, Seku's journey took a pivotal turn during a vacation to the Big Apple in 2008. It was there, amidst the familiar yet foreign streets, that he recognized a former acquaintance from a Jehovah's Witness group he once belonged to. This unexpected encounter set off a chain of events that would eventually lead him to confront his forgotten past. Meanwhile, in the East Village of NYC, Leslie Bright had been living under the assumption that her husband, Winston, had died. Something tragic had befallen him, everyone assumed, and it was time to move on and press forward. Since his presumed death in 2000, Leslie had been receiving his $300 per month pension, bittersweet reminder of the life they once shared. Then word spread about Winston actually being alive and well, and soon enough, Leslie and his kids met him face to face, but it wasn't as happy of a homecoming as you might think. Seku was always vague in his responses to what he remembered and what he didn't. But he remembered enough, small bits and pieces, to know that he was Winston, and now wanted his life back, or at least part of it. And Leslie was always skeptical, and despite acknowledging Seku as her husband, expressed doubts about his amnesia claim, citing a lack of medical records to substantiate his memory loss. Her children, too, initially supported her skepticism. Leslie said, "He just expected us to believe it. I would have been shouting it off of the roof to my kids to let them know what had happened." Now, still residing in California, Winston has his identity back, but his relationship with his family is strained. On his end, he feels like too much time has passed and he missed a huge chunk of his children's lives. He calls every few months to check in, but that's about it. On Leslie's side, she thinks it was all made up. Just a man who wanted out of his life, and so, rather than face the complexities of a divorce and abandonment, he just left, claiming amnesia as an easy way out. Number 2. The Astonishing Reunion of Gabriel Nagy. In the summer of 1987, the serene life of the Nagy family in Newcastle, Australia was shattered in an instant. Gabriel Nagy, a dedicated father of two and husband, vanished off without a trace. Gabriel's ordinary day at work ended in an extraordinary twist of fate. Driving home for lunch, he told his wife he would be there soon, but he never arrived. Because, on the way, he was involved in a catastrophic car crash. The aftermath, found a day later, revealed the burned-out husk of his vehicle, but no trace of Gabriel himself. His wife Pam, alongside their children, 9-year-old Jennifer, 11-year-old Stephen, grappled with the terrifying disappearance. Where was their dad, and was he hurt or worse? He had never been away without telling anyone, and right away his wife knew he was out there somewhere trying to get home. Sure enough, around 2 weeks later, there were signs that Mr. Nagy had withdrew money from his bank account in Newcastle, which he then used to buy camping supplies. But that was the last sign of him or any clue to his movements. More than 20 years passed with no word, no additional clues, and the painful possibility that Gabriel might be declared legally dead loomed large as an inquest was approaching. But fate had a different plan. Just when hope seemed lost, a vigilant policewoman stumbled upon something vital. Medical records that reignited the search for Gabriel. The truth of his disappearance was as heartbreaking as it was bizarre. And suffering from amnesia after the crash, he had spent the subsequent years adrift, living under an assumed name. His days were a blur of odd jobs and aimless wandering, far removed from his former life. He worked as a farmhand at various building sites and on fishing boats. His fragmented memories offered little solace, only a vivid recollection of bleeding profusely from his head and the scar that it left behind. Despite this, a chance encounter with Pastor Barry Hayoe offered him a semblance of stability, a caretaker job, and a place to stay. With brief flashes of his former past, with the help of the pastor, he was able to get a Medicare card under his original name. As the years passed, Gabriel's family grappled with the unresolved mystery, but Senior Constable Georgia Robinson, tasked with the inquest, was about to change all that. Meticulously scanning through Medicare records, she found a match, the man with Gabriel's name. Her relentless pursuit led her to the man who had been lost to his family, now for 23 years. Confronted with his past, Gabriel's long-buried memories began to resurface, kindled by letters from his family. The emotional weight of these rediscovered connections was overwhelming. Jennifer, now an adult at 32 years old, reached out with a simple yet powerful text. "Hi, Dad." The bond, seemingly severed by time and tragedy, was rekindling. The airport reunion between Jennifer and Gabriel was a poignant scene of long-lost family members running into each other's arms. The emotional resonance of their embrace spoke volumes of their enduring love and the pain of separation. Now, with the mystery solved, Gabriel Nagy's life has taken a new turn. Although not returning to live with his family, who had relocated to Queensland, he remains in regular contact, cherishing the renewed bond. Number 1. The Christmas Miracle of Larchmont. At McDonald's, life took a very unexpected turn back in March of 1971 when her husband James, an ordinary man with a routine life, suddenly vanished, leaving a void that lasted for 15 years. The McDonalds lived in a small brick house in Larchmont, New York, where Jim had worked at the post office for 25 years. The two had gotten married back in 1960. While they didn't have any children, the two of them enjoyed their lives in the suburb of New York City. A few months before his disappearance, 50-year-old Jim was taking out the trash one night when he slipped and fell on some ice, and landed on his back and hit his head. Just a few days after that, while headed to work, he couldn't stop sneezing and for a moment lost control of his car, which hit a telephone pole, which smashed his head into the windshield. And then the next day, a dizzy spell had him fall down a flight of stairs. And so, all these accidents then added up. Jim's head was severely injured, only he didn't know it. On March 29th, because his car was getting worked on, Jim borrowed his friend's station wagon to pick up Ann's brother from the airport. He went on to return the borrowed car that night around 10 p.m., and even though he was offered a ride home, he declined, looking to walk the 15 minutes to his house in order to clear his head. By 2 a.m., with no sign of her husband, Ann called the police. No sign of the man was ever found, except for his license, which he had likely left by mistake in his friend's station wagon. Years passed, and Anne, carrying the weight of uncertainty, faced a harsh reality. 1976, with still no sign of her husband, she made the heart-wrenching decision to declare him legally dead. But deep in her heart, she clung to the life they shared, maintaining their home and keeping their telephone listing unchanged, as if to guide James back, should fate allow it. Fast forward to Christmas Day, 15 years later. Anne, having returned from church, was sitting down for a late breakfast when an unexpected visitor and Christmas miracle turned her world upside down. Standing at her doorstep was a man who bore the resemblance of Santa Claus, with a beard and thin frame, but beneath the disguise, Anne recognized a familiar face. It was James. James recounted his astonishing journey. For 15 years, he lived under the alias Jim Peters in Philadelphia, leading a simple life as a short order cook, bartender, and even a seasonal Santa for orphanage children. His past, a blank slate, remained undiscovered until a serendipitous head bump in a luncheonette cellar, just one day before he arrived on her doorstep, seemed to jog his memories. In that very moment, the fog of amnesia lifted, and he remembered his life in Larchmont. Without hesitation, he boarded the next train home. The mystery of his disappearance, once a puzzle for Detective George Mulcahy, now found its missing piece. Amnesia, a condition long suspected by Anne and hinted at by James's history of head injuries, was the key to this case. Their reunion marked the beginning of a journey to rebuild a life interrupted. James aspired to return to his former role at the Larchmont Post Office while the couple faced the bureaucratic challenge of reversing his declared death. The Christmas Miracle of Larchmont, as it became known as, resonates with all of us, letting you know that sometimes the most improbable events can unfold in the most ordinary of places. So they were five mysterious disappearances caused by amnesia. Hope you all enjoyed those strange cases. If you did and you want more content from us, check out either our Scary Mysteries podcast or our Scary Mysteries YouTube channel, where you can watch all these episodes if you so choose. Thanks so much for stopping by and keeping me company. Y'all watch your backs out there, and I'll see you soon.